Coming up, it was a monumental day for the game on Tuesday as the court ruled in favour of the PGA Tour and denied a temporary restraining order to three LIV golfers. We discuss the implications of this decision. Plus, we'll have all the reaction to the big news as PGA Tour players, including Rory McIlroy, weigh in from the FedEx Cup playoffs in Memphis. Plus, we're joined by the newest women's major champion, Ashley Buhai. She recaps her historic AIG Women's Open win at famed Muirfield. All that and more as Golf Today begins now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Well, with that, we say a very good afternoon and welcome you into our Golf Today studios. Great to have you with us. Anna Jackson, delighted as always to be alongside the ever chirpy Eamon Lynch. Following what was quite the day in San Jose, California, the world of golf had all eyes inside that courtroom. Round one of the legal battle between the PGA Tour and LIV hit the headlines. Of course, the PGA Tour came out on top. It was quite the day, Eamon. I know, I imagine you went to sleep digesting everything that we had because there was a lot. You can easily go into the weeds on this thing, but coming out today, having taken a breath and stepped back, what's your biggest takeaway?
I think it's not often we see winners and losers declared in golf on a Tuesday, but that's pretty much what we had yesterday. And now, I guess, both parties just retreat back into their corners until the next round. And who knows when that will be, what form it will take. But we do know there are going to be more rounds, a lot of them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is just the beginning. This is just the tip of the iceberg. There are so many layers that are going to unfold with the antitrust lawsuit that will be coming our way later in the year and, of course, next year and many years to come. And I think it was fascinating hearing from the judge and how she set the tone from right away. You know, she knows her stuff. She is not messing around. And she really went hard on the lawyers of these three players. And she's not letting anything slip. And this was a real tone setter for what's to come, I think.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting that she said at the very outset of the proceedings, she outlined the areas in which she needed to be convinced, which was the idea of irreparable harm, and made it clear that to the attorneys for the three players, Gooch, Swofford and Jones, that they had not yet convinced her of that, and then set up the proceedings for the next couple of hours to give them the opportunity to do so, and then made clear before she retired, before giving her verdict or decision, she made clear that she still had some doubts that she hadn't been convinced of that. So the tone seemed to be drifting the PGA Tour's way from the outset. On that one, it wasn't a particularly good day for LIV Golf. I think it kind of undermined a lot of the arguments that are central, not only to their case yesterday, but in their case going forward.
Yeah, it was a huge day in terms of the PGA Tour and the history of the game. If you missed any of the action, let's get you caught up because yesterday was indeed a big news day in golf as District Judge Beth Labson-Freeman ruled in favour of the PGA Tour and denied a temporary restraining order to three LIV golfers, Taylor Gooch, Matt Jones and Hudson Swofford, who were seeking to play in this week's FedEx St. Jude Championship. So this statement was released from LIV Golf following the court ruling saying, we're disappointed that Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swofford and Matt Jones won't be allowed to play golf. No one gains by banning golfers from playing. And in return, the PGA Tour sent out this memo from Commissioner Jay Monahan saying, with today's news, our players, fans and partners can now focus on what really matters over the next 3 weeks. The best players in the world competing in the FedEx Cup playoffs, capping off an incredibly compelling season with the crowning of the FedEx Cup champion at the Tour Championship. I encourage you to reach out to me or any member of our staff for further insight, and I appreciate everything you do and have done for the PGA Tour. And do not forget, of course, those playoffs get underway tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, here on Golf Channel Round 1 coverage. So for more on yesterday's ruling, we head down to Memphis, where our Todd Lewis is on site at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, who caught up with the players.
Just moments into yesterday's hearing in Northern California, a severe thunderstorm struck here at TPC Southwind, forcing officials and players into the clubhouse. And while in the clubhouse, they gathered around electronic devices to watch the court procedures happening in California. And once the judge ruled against the TRO for Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swofford, and Matt Jones, well, then those watching feel like they had weathered a legal storm. And when they arrived here on the grounds here Wednesday in Memphis, they felt relieved that no LIV players will be a part of the FedEx Cup playoffs.
When you sue the PGA Tour, you're suing every single member that plays out here. So, you know, you're you're bringing something against your peers that you've played out here, you know, week in, week out for the last few years. And that's what makes it feel a little personal. I'm not begrudging anyone for going over there. They got to make the decisions that are right for them. And everyone has the right to do that. But, you know, when players, you know, that's why players that put their name on that suit, the players that didn't, I have a little more respect for, because they know that they're making a decision and that they live with it. And it's, you know, they're not affecting anyone else. They're going over there to play, and that's fine. You know, right now we're, you know, we've got that behind us, so it's nice to be able to just focus on the golf and go out here and try to crown a FedEx Cup winner.
It's kind of like I said from the start, it's those guys were given an opportunity to go play and just go play. You know, don't, you can have your cake, but you don't need to eat it too. And they got their fair share of a large, large amount of cake, and, you know, go eat it on your own means. You know, you don't need to bring it onto our tour. And I think we keep it how it is, and we can continue to build an unbelievable product that's given a lot of us, like myself, a great platform to just keep improving it.
And when the judge denied the TRO, we were all pretty relieved. You know, for us to come out here and to support this tour the entire year, and obviously those guys made their decision, was pretty telling. And I thought, you know, one thing that I really liked that Mr. Elliott said, who's representing us, was, you know, part of their TRO was that, you know, they wanted to recoup some of their financial losses. And Mr. Elliott said, well, they made their decision and they've made more money in the last 3 months than they've made in their entire career. So that was something that we were all pretty happy to see.
And I've said to some of the guys personally, I think they've been brainwashed by the way they feel so adamant that they're going to be back out on the PGA Tour. I've had several of them tell me, look forward to seeing you on tour again. And they said, I'll see you on tour again. I said, no, you won't. I mean, they've been, a couple of them are pretty brainwashed in the way they've thinking and what they've been told. I just feel, as does a lot of members of the PGA Tour and a lot of employees of the PGA Tour, just feel, you know, a small vindication at this point, because it's not over, but that everything that's been done is correct, and we are, you know, with our own right to do what they've done.
Of course, this decision by the judge yesterday is a positive for the PGA Tour, but it is just the first battle. Now, this same judge will hear the case brought to the court by LIV Golf that now includes just 10 players after Carlos Ortiz pulled out of the lawsuit. In regards to when that case will be heard again, well, dates were discussed in the hearing yesterday, and the earliest on the calendar is late in 2023.
Good stuff. Thanks, Todd. I mean, relief is a word that we heard come up multiple times from multiple players there, because, you know, we've been talking about this the whole time, but the longer that this goes on, the more personal it is getting, Eamon, and the further the LIV golfers try to take this through the legal battle, the more money they will be taking, really, from those players on the PGA Tour. And that is why this is so dramatic for those players, because, yes, like all the players have said, you know, go off, have your take the money, take the very large slice of cake, as Justin Thomas said it, and enjoy that, but don't come back and start tucking into our meal as well. And that's what they're doing. I mean, what's your opinion on what you've heard?
I think the part of this that might actually smooth over fastest in the short term is the personal element that we heard Rory McIlroy, for instance, refer to there, because these guys are not going to be out on the PGA Tour. They're not going to be double dipping, as the players refer to it. They're not going to cross paths in the locker room, or they're not going to be paired with them on the tee. The rest of it's going to continue. I think LIV is going to continue to sign players. The sniping on either side is going to continue as well. But it is a blow to LIV, because LIV's ability to raise its profile, to keep its players competitively relevant, to keep its players in the public eye, required being able to function as a parasite on the PGA Tour, because they don't have world ranking points. They don't have an audience that's actually watching their product, which is only available on either YouTube or on their own website. And they're going to be playing next year in more far-flung corners of the world. So they needed the existing ecosystem, and in particular the PGA Tour platform, to raise those guys up. They're not going to be able to do that now, and I think that's a significant loss for those guys. And it was interesting to hear Billy Horschel just refer to brainwashing there. Greg Norman insisted publicly and privately to these players that no suspension or ban by the PGA Tour would be legal or sustainable. Mm-hmm. He was wrong. And players who listened to Greg Norman or took him at his word, or the lawyers that he has around him, who may have even said the same thing, those players now have to live with the consequences of that decision, because I'm sure there have got to be some LIV players who thought, as they told Billy Horschel, that they would be back out on the PGA Tour again, that it simply had to work its way through the courts and the PGA Tour's ban or suspension would be struck down. That is not the case. And these guys have to live with the consequences. I'm sure the check kind of softens the blow for a lot of them, but they definitely thought they would be able to use the PGA Tour's platform to keep their own profile high, to keep their own competitive relevance sharp, and to keep getting world ranking points. That's no, no, and no.
Which I imagine comes as a bit of a shock to those guys who have decided to go to LIV. You sort of put yourself in the shoes of three pools of players. You've got those three players who went through the temporary restraining order yesterday, who I imagine are pretty shocked that they're not teeing it up in Memphis this week. You've then got the PGA Tour pros who we've just heard from, who said that relief. Rory mentioned that it was a common sense outcome, that this is, of course, the way that the ruling should have gone. And then you've got those LIV players as well who have made their decision to walk away. I mean, what do you think their response will be when they are seeing that these suspensions are being upheld? There is no way out of this right now 2-year suspension, and the effect that that is going to have on their career going forward is monumental.
Some of these guys signed for a number that's big enough that they were clearly not that bothered by it. And the judge made this point in the hearing yesterday, that that was baked into the contracts of LIV guys, the potential losses they would face in terms of sponsorship, in terms of access to the biggest tournaments, and the lowering of their profile. And at one point, the players were told, you are here complaining about something you've already been compensated for as part of your contract. And some guys resigned their membership of the PGA Tour. Graham McDowell did, walked away. Dustin Johnson also walked away. Some of them did not resign their membership but have not taken part in any litigation, which in a way is signalling, you know, I've made my choice, I'm going to live with it, I'm not particularly interested in playing PGA Tour events, I'm certainly not going to litigate whether or not I can play PGA Tour events. Others, I suspect, had to accept the role as the patsy, because LIV Golf needed plaintiffs with standing to sue. And these guys had standing to sue. They're not by any means the highest profile guys out there in LIV Golf. But there's a reason Phil Mickelson was paid an enormous amount of money, and it's not because of his potential future playing ability at the age of 52. It's to become a plaintiff on behalf of the Saudi government and LIV Golf to try to dismantle the existing apparatus in golf and reshape the sport to their benefit. That's why they paid these guys.
OK, well, there is just so many angles to attack this case from what we heard yesterday. We are only just getting started. We have got a 3-hour show here on Golf Today, so plenty more conversations surrounding yesterday's court ruling. But looking at the field this week for the FedEx St. Jude Championship, it was at 121. Some news this morning that whittled down to 120 after Hideki Matsuyama withdrew from the first playoff event, citing a neck injury. In a statement from the 2021 Masters champion, Hideki said he needed to rest his neck in order to compete at the next two playoff events. Matsuyama sits at 11th on the FedEx Cup playoff eligibility points list.
We're coming up next on Golf Today. Eyebrows are usually only raised in press conferences by what a player says. But yesterday, Cameron Smith made news for what he wouldn't say. We'll discuss the uncertainty around his future when we come back.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet. Live your bet life. And Wind Grips, the best grips in golf. And by Zexio. Experience light, experience easy. Zexio, experience the difference.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Now, in January, Cameron Smith won the Century Tournament of Champions in record fashion, shooting 34 under 258 to beat John Rahm by one stroke to break the PGA Tour record for lowest 72-hole score to par, which was 31 under set by Ernie Els back in 2003 at this event. Now, Smith, who shot rounds of 65, 64, 64, 65 at the Plantation course at Kapalua, became the sixth player to win both of the Tour's Hawaii events, including his win at the 2020 Sony Open. So How about moving on to the Players? He won for the second time this season at the Players Championship, shooting 66 in the final round on Monday, beating Anirban Lahiri by one stroke. He made 10 birdies in the final round, tied for the most ever in one round in the Players at TPC Sawgrass. And most recently, just last month, winning the Open at St. Andrews for his first major title, his third win of the season on tour. Smith shot 64 on Friday and Sunday to finish at 20 under, matching the record for best score to par in a major, and beat Cameron Young by one stroke. So what a season it has been for this young Aussie. Here's a look at his PGA Tour season up until this point. 16 starts, those three wins, and numerous top 10s, top 25s, and just the three missed cuts. But there's a storyline developing with Cam Smith and his possible association with LIV Golf, and he met with the media yesterday in Memphis.
Cam, I have an obvious question for you. There are reports in the Telegraph that you are imminently signing with LIV Golf or have signed with LIV Golf. Cameron Percy earlier today said you were going, and yet here you are intending to play the playoffs. Do you care to comment?
Yeah, you know, my goal here is to win the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's all I'm here for. If there's something I need to say regarding the PGA Tour or LIV, it will come from Cameron Smith, not Cameron Percy. I'm a man of my word, and whenever you guys need to know anything, it'll be said by me.
And just following up on that, you being a man of your word, you know, the Telegraph is reporting that you've signed and are going. Would you like to say yes or no to that?
I have no comment to that. Like I said, I'm here to play the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's been my focus the last week and a half. That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to win the FedEx Cup playoffs. And like I said, it'll come from me. It won't come from Cameron Percy.
Do you intend to play the President's Cup?
Absolutely, yeah. That's something that we've been looking forward to for the last 3 years. We missed a year because of COVID, and that's something that I look forward to being a part of.
One of the things being reported is that you are going to be playing in the LIV Boston event in early September. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. I'm here to play the FedEx Cup playoffs, mate. That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to win the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's my priority.
No, I know, 'cause I asked you about the President's Cup, and you said you were looking forward to it. That's actually later, so I thought maybe something earlier you could say if you were intending to play.
No.
Good. All right.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks, Cam. Yep, appreciate it.
Eesh, amen. That is an awkward press conference for Cam Smith there. I mean, his face at one point was as pink as a shirt. I mean, it's just really difficult questioning, which he is refusing to deny or accept. He's just giving us the no comment. What is your reaction from what we're hearing from Cam Smith?
We saw the same in his press conference after he won the Open Championship in St. Andrews, when he was asked about these LIV rumours that have been running rampant for some time, and he's clearly getting terse at the questioning. Well, if you don't like questions or you find those questions irritating, one way to deal with it is answer them. But Cameron Smith's not doing that, and that's very much on brand for guys who've gone to LIV, because they all play along on a spectrum that starts with coy, moves through evasive, and gets to duplicitous by the end. It's not quite clear at this point where on that spectrum Cameron Smith is. He's at least in the coy phase or the evasive phase of it now. But that's essentially how it does. You don't see much pride from these guys in or excitement in announcing that they're going to go do this. And if he has signed a contract, then he would clearly have intent to do so and should just be honest about it. Bubba Watson has managed to do that. He's declared that he is going to go play LIV Golf. He's not playing on the PGA Tour right now because he's injured. But it should be noted that Bubba Watson is impacting five guys on the FedEx Cup rankings and their future career prospects, because he hasn't been suspended, because he hasn't put a tee in the ground, but he's declared his loyalty to LIV. If he were to, you know, resign his PGA Tour membership, then that would address the issue for the rest of those guys. But he's harming somebody by remaining where he is while intending to and having announced his intent to go play LIV Golf. Cameron Smith could put this to rest very easily. He's had ample opportunity to do so. The fact that he has not put it to rest is what's leading to the questions, and all it does is increase the speculation that he is going somewhere. And there's a really interesting angle to this as well, is that there are legitimately two candidates for the Player of the Year vote on the PGA Tour: Cameron Smith and Scottie Scheffler. This is a vote by their peers. the chances that Cameron Smith's peers in the current environment are going to vote for a guy as player of the year who they suspect or fear might decamp to live golf in a matter of weeks is zero. Player of the year will be Scottie Scheffler in some small part because Cam Smith is a potential defector.
But I mean, that's part of the deal right now, realistically, isn't it? If you sign your life away to live golf, then you do sort of wipe away any focus that you had on legacy, history in the game, sort of building your profile. I mean, those things don't come with playing on live golf right now. So if that is a bargain that Cam Smith is willing to make, then that's the bet that he's made for himself. But, you know, there are players, you know, let's be honest, that isn't overly disappointing seeing them go to live. They're not the players that we get up and we look forward to seeing play week in, week out on the PGA Tour. But I have to say, especially after this season, Cam Smith is one of those players. Oh, yeah. He's one of those players who has a fantastic personality and he shines on a golf course. You know, he's got the mullet and he's someone that we've been really excited about seeing his rise in the game and, you know, winning the flagship event of the PGA Tour, the Players' Championship, the 150th Open. There is nothing more raw and pure than winning at St. Andrews. And he accomplished all of that this season. And then to throw that all away and sign a huge, huge potential monetary ticket to go over to LIV Golf, it feels like this is one of the biggest losses that the PGA Tour will be facing.
It would certainly be a huge coup for LIV Golf because it would be the first time they've signed a player who is absolutely, indisputably playing the best golf of his life. And it fits what seems to be a model of getting a collection of guys from Australia, a collection of guys from South Africa, as though it may play into the team or tournament venue format down the road for them. And Cam Smith's always been very open that insane money didn't bother him that much. He loved competition. He said that repeatedly throughout his career. It just turns out that at a certain point, if the number gets big enough, there's one thing you love more than competition, which is cash. He hasn't confirmed anything on that yet, but his repeated refusal to put it to rest only increases the speculation that there is something there.
Yeah, well, he said he's a man of his word. As soon as he knows what he's doing, he said it will come from him himself. He is planning, of course, to play in the next 3 weeks in the FedEx Cup and then on to the international team for the President's Cup later in September, where you can see he is the strongest player on that team by a mile when it comes to points, joining the likes of Hideki Matsuyama and Joaquin Neiman and some great names on that international side. OK, well, stay with us here on Golf Today. We've got a big guest coming up. It was a historic Sunday for Ashley Buhai, who joined an elite list of champions at famed Muirfield. The AIG Women's Open champion joins us next when Golf Today returns.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Well, it was an incredible week for Ashley Buhai at the AIG Women's Open as the championship made its way to Muirfield for the first time. Buhai was able to conquer the Scottish winds for her first major victory. Buhai entered the final round with a 5-shot lead, lost it after a triple bogey on 15, only to outlast Inji Chun in a 4-hole sudden death playoff. So let's take a look at other players, other women who have earned their first LPGA Tour win at this championship since it became a major back in 2001. Look at that stretch, 2018 through 2020. Georgia Hall, Hinako Shibuno, Sofia Popov, and now Ashley Buhai in 2022. So life is pretty sweet right now for Buhai, and you can see it looks like she's hauling around a little bit of extra hardware. She posted this on Instagram saying, hand luggage upgrade. That is correct, Ashley Buhai. So I'm very pleased to welcome in the new major champion herself. Ashley, it is so wonderful to see you. Congratulations. Tell us, you've had a couple of days to digest everything. It's been 15 years in the making. How are you feeling now looking back on the week that was?
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on today. Obviously, it's been a whirlwind few days, dream come true. As you said, being professional turned pro at the age of 18, and, you know, for it to finally come to reality, I still have to pinch myself.
How were your nerves Sunday morning, Ashley, when you got ready to go out to the final round with a big lead? Because we'd heard Scottie Scheffler, for instance, talk at the Masters, how he was so shaken on Sunday morning, wasn't sure he was ready for the moment. You were heading out there Sunday at Muirfield with a pretty big lead. How did your nerves hold up that morning?
Yeah, I was good Saturday evening. You know, I stayed in a house with my husband, who's caddying another player, Steph Meadow, my physio. And, you know, I think that was cool. We played some Uno, took it easy. And then Sunday morning, I woke up and it hit me. I was very nervous. I gave Duncan McCarthy, who I've referenced, a call, and I actually did think of Scotty Scheffler, you know, when he, from what he said after that morning and how he felt. And I think it's just all a bit overwhelming, but then once you get to the course, you tend to calm down and you're there to do your job, and you know how to do your job. So just take it step by step and manage to luckily pull it off.
Ashley, you know, it seems like no matter how big your lead is coming into the final round of a major championship, it's always going to be a stressful day, no matter how big your advantage is. Now, of course, 15 is where things started to spiral with that triple bogey. Coming into that hole and walking off that hole, how did your emotions sort of journey throughout those 20 minutes or so?
Surprisingly calm, actually. I didn't feel any different. You know, obviously, I felt, yes, I hit a bad drive, but I got a bad break too. You know, for it to plug in the bunk the way it did and have to play backwards, then there wasn't too much sand there. You know, if I had half a decent lie, I would have hit it out and probably made five. So I just said to myself, okay, you've done so much good this week. Focus on that. My caddy said to me, all right, get back on it. We've got three holes to go. And that's all I had to focus on. I couldn't focus on what just happened. Otherwise, I don't think I would have been able to make those key pars coming in.
Ashley, you've had a couple of top tens on the tour this year. There wasn't a great deal in your recent form that would suggest that this was imminent. Did you feel as though you were playing better than the results suggested heading into Muirfield?
Yeah, I do. I did. I think from around April, I found things started to turn around. I finished fourth in Hawaii and I finished ninth in LA. And then you know, I played well at the KPMG. I felt I finished 21st and then tied 15th at Evian. So I've been hitting it good. It's just about, you know, keeping those other mistakes off the card every now and then. And that's what I managed to do other than 15th on Sunday.
Ashley, you know, it's one thing winning the AIG Women's Open. It's another thing winning this championship at the FAME Muirfield, the first woman to ever etch her name in history at this prestigious course, joining seven men who have done the same thing with the likes of Gary Player and Early Earls, your fellow countrymen. I mean, it's such a magnificent achievement because it puts your name just up into that next level to achieve something like that at a venue like that, but also to have these major championships in the women's game elevated. You know, next year we're going to the likes of Pebble Beach and Bolter's Roll, Walton Heath back in England. How important is this for the elevation of the women's game?
It's huge. I mean, for us to be able to go to these iconic venues, I mean, it's taking our game to the next step. And we're so grateful to be given this opportunity and we're all so excited. I mean, it's one of the first things I said to my caddy. I said, we're going to Pebble. You know, this year, I didn't play the US Open. I didn't qualify, as I only really started to play well kind of the few weeks before that, I felt. So, you know, the fact now I'm into the majors for the next 5 years and I don't have to worry about anything. I can look forward to the next few years and all these great venues we're going to go to.
Ashley, have you ever hit a better shot under pressure than the bunker shot that you hit on that final playoff hole?
No. Never.
But you did earlier in the week. It's correct. I saw my colleague Beth Ann Nichols had reported that you had actually looked up a video of Ernie Els' bunker shots at Muirfield back on his way to winning the 2002 Open for some inspiration earlier in the week.
Yeah, I did. My caddy and I were out there on a practice round and I spoke about it and I said, oh, you know, you watch these videos and you reminisce. And I was like, oh, I got to see like where he actually was, you know, to see how difficult the shot was. So I don't know, there must be something in the sand at Muirfield with South Africans and bunkers that we like. I think just in general, South Africans, we tend to have a pretty good sand play. I felt the bunkers were very fair at Muirfield. There was a lot of sand in them, obviously, for the winds. But, I mean, it was a little downhill lie, which actually helped me, and a little downwind. So I knew I kind of just had to get it out and it should feed down to the hole.
Actually, there's always a sense on tour that South Africans are a very close bunch. On the men's side, you always see the South Africans hanging out together, and I'm sure similar on the women's side. It's a very kind of close community. And to have the likes of Gary Player and Ernie Els kind of reach out to you during the week, what did that mean to you in terms of recognising the scale of what you were about to achieve?
Yeah, it's humbling. I mean, you know, they're my heroes growing up. So for them to reach out and wish me good luck, it was very exciting for me. And then for me to obviously pull it off and to join them, you know, on that list of major winners at Muirfield and just as a major winner. It really is such an honour.
Ashley, you achieved a tremendous amount of success on the South African tour when you were still a teenager. Were you surprised at how much harder it is to come by success at the absolute elite level of the game? And now that you have, what does it do to your goals moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's been such a long journey. There was so much expectation of me turning pro at 18. You know, I've won on my third event on the LET, so obviously everybody just expected it to continue. But as we know, this game has ebbs and flows, and we deal with injuries, we deal with, you know, Q schools. And I've been doing this 15 years, and I'm 33, and I say, well, I feel like I'm playing the best golf of my life in the last 3 years. So I'm very excited. I feel my game is where it needs to be. My coach and I have worked very hard to just get it to be consistent, to be able to, you know, try compete week in and week out and be around. And obviously now that I'm a winner and even a major champion, hopefully it boosts my confidence even more.
Absolutely, Ashley. You are proof of the sentiment of never giving up, and the reward doesn't get much better than that little trophy just sat behind you there. Can you give us an idea of where that thing's been over the last few days?
Yeah, obviously we finished so late on Sunday evening, but once we got in, we went, I finished media up around 10:30 and went into the Players Pavilion. All my friends that were watching me from tour and the friends and caddies, they stayed behind, and I had some family there from South Africa. And then spent the night in Edinburgh, went for dinner with my caddy, her husband, and another caddy who caddies for MB Park and his fiance. And there were a few beverages. I don't actually drink, so they've all had much more alcohol out of it than me. And I think even my husband's probably touched it more than I have, but it's all been very exciting.
That's even worse when you're not drinking and you're seeing your party just deteriorate around you. But actually,
we've had a few sips out of it. Have to do that.
Absolutely. Well, enjoy every moment. Soak it up. We are so happy for you. You're such a popular champion out on tour. You truly deserve it. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much.
We're just a day away from the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs, as 120 of the qualified 125 are in Memphis for the FedEx St. Jude Championship. First round coverage begins tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, on Golf Channel. And three players we won't see in the field are Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swafford, and Matt Jones. Yesterday, a California court denied a request by the three LIV golfers to compete in the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. After a hearing that lasted almost 2 hours, District Judge Beth Labson Freeman ruled in favour of the PGA Tour and denied a temporary restraining order to the three golfers. For more on that now, we're pleased to welcome in Jodie Balsam, a sports law professor at Brooklyn Law School. Professor Balsam, you were with us yesterday evening, offering your perspective as this decision unfolded. In the cold light of morning, how do you think either one of the sides here, the PGA Tour and LIV Golf, is reassessing its position in terms of the overall antitrust case?
Well, just to point out that whether this case succeeds or fails from LIV Golf's perspective, they're going to continue competing with the deep-pocketed Saudi investment fund behind them. So even if this victory portended a complete victory in the antitrust case for PGA Tour, it's not the end of the market competition they're going to continue to engage in. But I will say that the TRO's failure, the failure to get emergency relief for these three players, does reduce the settlement leverage that this lawsuit gives LIV Golf. To the extent that this was just one weapon in its arsenal, one strategy towards inducing the PGA Tour to accommodate its presence in the golf ecosystem, that stratagem now has that much less power to it.
Jodie, in your experience with cases like this, I mean, we heard in great detail from both sides of the case yesterday. What was your biggest takeaway from what we heard from the two sides of the lawyers?
Well, the biggest takeaway is that it's going to be a very uphill battle for LIV Golf players to obtain any sort of preliminary injunctive relief from this judge pending the outcome of the litigation. The judge made a critical finding and ruling yesterday, which is that these golfers were not suffering any irreparable harm in being excluded from PGA Tour events that would entitle them to injunctive relief pending the outcome of the litigation. That whatever harms they are alleging, they can be satisfied if proven to be the PGA Tour's fault. Those harms can be satisfied through a monetary judgment. And the absence of a preliminary injunction at this stage or later in the litigation is going to empower the PGA Tour to battle this case to its merits conclusion, right? And remember that in a case like this, the first request for a TRO is only the first opportunity to try to obtain injunctive relief. At any point later on in the lawsuit, and in fact invited by the judge, the LIV Golf 10, now we're down to 10 players who are bringing this lawsuit, can ask the judge for interim relief that allows them to participate in the PGA Tour's events. That kind of request can be revisited later in the lawsuit, but this irreparable harm finding, or rather lack of irreparable harm finding, makes that a more difficult request to win.
Jody, I'm curious if the major championships can take anything from this. If a major hypothetically were to say that we will render ineligible a player who is suspended by a major tour, not necessarily singling out LIV Golf, but saying any suspended player from a major tour would not be eligible to play in a major championship, would that expose those major championships to potential legal action?
It would under the following circumstances. If it could be alleged and then ultimately proven that the majors did so because they colluded in some way with the PGA Tour, they were induced, pressured, or engaged in some conspiracy to exclude these players in connection with the PGA Tour. You see, the antitrust laws, broadly speaking, permit two types of claims in this context. One is the claim that most of us have been focusing on, that the PGA Tour is a monopolist that has abused its monopoly position to try to exclude a competitor, LIV Golf. That's the claim that the court focused on mostly yesterday. But the other kind of claim is one that alleges a conspiracy amongst participants in a market to structure that market in a way that harms competition, that restrains trade. And a conspiracy could be alleged as between the PGA Tour and any of the major golf hosts, major golf tournament hosts, that they were acting together in concert to try to exclude LIV golfers from playing. Now, unilaterally, those major tournaments can decide to exclude those golfers, and I think they would face very little antitrust risk in doing so. But if it can be alleged that they colluded with the PGA Tour in making that decision, they could be the next target of an antitrust suit.
One of the things Judge Freeman had focused on yesterday, Jody, was this idea of free riding, that the LIV golfers were benefiting from the PGA Tour's business to build up their own business. Does that apply in any way to the majors? I mean, could any of the major championships say that LIV was free riding on their platform and their reputation?
Well, it certainly could be a concern that they want to do business, they want to engage with the participants in the golf ecosystem that support the game, that are doing so for the good of the game, for the long-term health and welfare of the golfers in the game. And they could decide not to do business with a particular entity because they feel it's bad for the game, and especially if it's an entity like the Saudi government, which has brings along with it certain reputational harms. But the important thing is that whatever decision the majors make, they need to do so independently of each other and of the PGA Tour. It's very easy to allege in a complaint, oh, the reason that you did this, the reason you excluded these golfers is because you were pressured by the PGA Tour, or that you are colluding with the PGA Tour. And they want to make sure there isn't a whisper of such collusion before they make a decision to exclude any golfer.
Jody, this is just the first example that we're seeing of LIV Golf players launching these TROs because they genuinely feel like they are entitled to play on the PGA Tour for numerous reasons that we listened to yesterday. Do you think this is something that we will be seeing repetitively during the years to come of this antitrust lawsuit? Has this shut down the possibility for any player to ignite another TRO, or do you think this is something that we may see again?
Well, not to put too fine a point on it, but what was requested yesterday was a TRO, emergency relief, that would be very short-lived, temporary, as its name suggests. So the next type of relief that might be requested is a preliminary injunction. And the court, in fact, in the hearing, invited the parties to consider bringing such a motion, invited LIV Golf players to move for what is known as preliminary interim relief that would last not a short time frame, such as the FedEx Cup playoffs, but for the duration of the lawsuit until it reaches final judgment after a jury trial. That kind of hearing would be much more developed of a record. It would be after there had been some discovery taken. It would require witness testimony in the courtroom. In fact, the judge suggested that her trial calendar, her schedule for getting this case to trial, should build into it days set aside for such a preliminary injunction hearing. Whether the players are going to bring that kind of motion and seek that kind of relief that would extend throughout the duration of the lawsuit is still a question we don't have an answer to.
Jody, what are the kinds of things that will come up in discovery in this action? For instance, will there be access to the individual contracts of LIV golfers? Will there be access to the disciplinary records on the PGA Tour?
The discovery in an antitrust case is often very broad and extensive and deep into the business of all parties concerned, because it is required to educate whoever will ultimately determine the facts in the case, whether it's a judge or a jury, how does the industry operate? And certainly plaintiffs are going to be required to reveal all the details of how LIV Golf is structured as a financial matter, how they pay their players, what monies are guaranteed. All of this will be relevant on numerous points of their claims, including the kind of damages that might ultimately be awarded should they prevail. Same thing on the PGA side. To the extent that the claims, for example, involve allegations that the PGA's disciplinary process is unfair or biased or incoherent, then they will be allowed to seek information about how that process has unfolded in other cases. There will be protections, though, for individuals' private information. So if any player is concerned, well, I have had a disciplinary matter in front of the PGA in the past. Is that going to be open to the public now? I'm sure the parties will request that a confidentiality order be put in place, at least pending the litigation, so that any materials like that that should be treated confidentially will be and will not be part of the public record.
Okay, Jody, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time as this legal battle continues and helps to shed light on what this all means, Jody. So thank you so much for your time, as always. Well, the FedEx Cup playoffs are upon us this week as 120 of the 125 eligible players will battle the Memphis heat and humidity. The field will jockey for position and hope to earn enough points to qualify for next week's BMW Championship. So if you're looking to make a few bets, I've got just the man for you. For more on the FedEx St. Jude Championship, we welcome in the head of training at trading for PointsBet. Jay, it's really good to see you. Let's look at the outright odds for this week. What stands out for you as you take a look at them?
Yeah, I think the first thing is just that a lot changes in 12 months. 12 months ago, we were looking at John Rahm as the favourite for pretty much every tournament that he was in. And then right behind him would be Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa. They've all slid a little bit. And now it's Rory McIlroy's world, been Scottie Scheffler's season as well, Cam Smith. And so those are the guys at the top of the odds board.
Jay, Rory McIlroy is entering the week as the favourite. Is there good value to be had in actually betting on him this week?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, he is the best golfer in the world. That's how we're pricing him. We think that right now, Rory McIlroy is even better than he was in 2014. That's the level that he is playing at, better than when he won the Open Championship and the PGA Championship. So, look, he's just a top 10 machine. He's plus 115 this week to finish in the top 10, and he's done that at six of his eight past starts. So I think that Rory will be in the mix again.
Okay, well, not too far back, Jay, is Scottie Scheffler, world number one, just the most remarkable first half to this season. But are bettors as enthusiastic on Scottie now that they may have been earlier in the year when he was just on one of the biggest stretches of anyone's career?
Yeah, not quite as bullish. It's not as fun betting on Scottie Scheffler at 15-1 as it was at 40-1, where he was for pretty much all tournaments at the start of the season. But look, we still view Scheffler as the second best golfer in the world behind Rory McIlroy. He's been neck and neck with Rory in odds boards to start tournaments the past few weeks. So I think that certainly there'll be some interest in play if Scheffler gets off to a hot start.
Jay, you mentioned John Rahm earlier, and it seemed as though this time last year, he was the guy we talked about week in, week out. Even through the start of this year, we talked about John Rahm as the favourite every week. Seems to have gone off the boil a little bit. What movement have we seen on his odds since the start of the year?
Yeah, well, at the start of the year, he was shorter than any golfer to win tournaments than anyone we've seen since peak Tiger Woods. We thought that John Rahm was that good. We thought he was clearly the best golfer in the world, and there was a huge gap. And he was going off at plus 600. To win tournaments, which you just don't ever see. And now he's out to 20-1, so he's more fallen back into the pack. And people are just afraid to back John Rahm at the moment. He hasn't been good his past two starts, but certainly wouldn't write John Rahm off. Still think he has the highest ceiling of any golfer in the world. He just needs to figure it out.
Okay, interesting. Well, Jay, let's look ahead to the end of the playoffs, the big one. What are the odds looking like to win the FedEx Cup? What's standing out?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing that stands out is that Scottie Scheffler is plus 200 to lift the FedEx Cup, and just goes to show what an incredible season that he has had, winning those four tournaments in six starts, which is just ridiculous. That's still the story of the season. And then Rory McIlroy, he's hot on his heels, and with the nature of the playoffs and the scoring, if he can win one of these next two events, he's going to be in great position for the final. And then if you look a bit further down, one guy that I would look at is Tony Finau, who won this event last season and is coming off two wins in his past two starts. He's in really good form, and now that he's got, you know, he's got it off his back not being able to win tournaments, I think he's playing a bit freer, and he might be an underdog who can make a bit of a run.
Okay, good stuff. It's never harm in putting a bit of money on an underdog, Jay. Thank you so much for your insight as always. Let's get betting. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to Golf Today. U.S. Women's Amateur is well underway. 64 players have advanced past stroke play and will now go head-to-head in match play. The event marks the third USGA Championship to be held at Chambers Bay. And you can catch today's coverage at 6 p.m. Eastern right here on Golf Channel. And here are some of the past champions in the U.S. Women's Amateur. The last 5 years, starting with Sophia Schubert, all the way up to Jensen Castle, the defending champion who won last year at Westchester Country Club. We flash back to a former champion of our own here, Amanda Blumenhurst, 2008 Eugene Country Club. She was then a Duke senior, and she won the U.S. Women's Amateur with a 2-1 victory over Arizona State senior Azahara Munoz. I almost got through that one. Amanda had a pretty decorated amateur career. She won the 2008 U.S. Women's Amateur, was a three-time National Player of the Year at Duke, finished tied 10th Colo Amateur at the 2006 U.S. Women's Open. She did not finish outside the top 10 in a single college event until her senior year. We're pleased to be joined now by Amanda Blumenhurst. And Amanda, you've got such a tremendous record in history with the U.S. Women's Amateur. And the news through the first 3 days, 4 days of this tournament, is that we have a 13-year-old tied as co-medalist in Alice Zhao. What is the possibility that she could actually go all the way?
I mean, it's just absolutely insane how young and talented these players are. I mean, it just seems to get younger and younger no matter just what is happening in the world of golf. So she could for sure go all the way. I mean, we saw Megan Gane, who is a contestant, just absolutely lighted up at the Olympic Club. And who knows, my 2.5-year-old might be making a run for it too before you know it. But it is absolutely unreal how young and talented these golfers are. So, hey, I give her a really good chance. The only thing is match play is extremely long and grueling, especially when it comes to those 36-hole days, the finals, 36 holes. So it'll be a challenge for anyone in the field.
Yeah, and I mean, Ella Rose, she's only 11 years away from being in the same position. If there's one thing I know about Ella Rose, if there's an opportunity to be on TV, she's going to take it.
So 100%.
I mean, looking back at your win in 2008, Amanda, you finished runner-up in 2007. How big of a moment did you know that it was going to be if you could just cross the line the following year?
So it was just really sad and heartbreaking when that happened, when I finished runner-up. It was definitely the low point. So making that final putt to win, it honestly made it just that much sweeter because it was really difficult. It was hard to lose when you make it so far, but then kissing that trophy, it was worth, you know, the heartache of finishing runner-up. But it was really, it was amazing. And you know, I think back to everything that I did in college and in junior golf and professionally, and that's by far my biggest accomplishment.
Amanda, there aren't many people who've had as much experience through the match play portion of the women's amateur as you have in those 2 years, making it all the way to the final both times. How does the mindset change from the stroke play earlier in the week to qualify, and then as you're working your way through the matches to that 36-hole final?
Well, it's much different when you think of you're only having one person to play against instead of kind of playing against yourself. Because that's like the big thing is when it is the entire field and you just have to focus on your game and stroke play. You just, you know, if you get a bad lie or you just play safe, you know, there's a different mentality. But when there is a, when it's all about, she's losing it because we have a drawer issue here. But when it is match play, you can have a bad hole and you can just let it go. And you can say, hey, I just lost 1 point. You know, there's going to be 36, you know, 30 holes, 18 holes. It doesn't matter. And you can just really focus. I love match play. It took me a long time to get there, honestly. And then once I got kind of that love of it, because it is, it's so different than stroke play, where I felt like I had my one opponent and I could just kind of like, all right, it's just you and me on the golf course. And I'm gonna bury you. I had that kind of like killer mentality. And but it is, switching gears is tough. Some players don't like match play. And it took me a long time to get there.
I mean, if anyone can balance the emotions and multitask of a million things happening in one go, it's you, Amanda. We're seeing it happen right now. But just talk us through the Sunday. You know, 36 holes, it's absolutely grueling. How hard is it to get through both of those matches and to come out on the other side? Because, I mean, this is the biggest amateur competition in the women's game. Just how grueling is the week in total?
That's what makes it so long is when, I mean, it's a really long tournament of just stroke play, and that is one of the more difficult things. Is first you have to make it through stroke play, and then you're exhausted, and then you've got to go and play match play. And like you said, you've got 36 holes, and then you make it to the finals. It's another 36 holes, and it's good to be young. It's good to have the endurance to do it, and so. You know, taking your time. I always like to hit the reset button when I would play 18 holes, go have lunch, change clothes, and then just like you're playing obviously another 18 just to feel like it was a new day and get your rhythm and momentum back.
Okay, well, Amanda, no one knows what this week is more about better than you do. We will let you go because Ella Rose has got some jewelry issues to attend to and we can't keep her waiting.
She's in the bathroom now and who knows what she's doing.
Best go find her. Amanda, thank you so much, and we will see you very soon.
All right, see you guys soon.
Okay, storylines unfolding, by the way. The number one seeder, Tana Stone, has just lost her match 2-1, so don't go anywhere. You can check it out right after us. First round coverage of the US Women's Amateur begins on After Golf Today at 6 p.m. Eastern, and we will be back right after this. Well, some news just as we wrap things up here on Golf Today. It was a couple of weeks ago when Bubba Watson said that he would be joining the LIV Golf Tour. And in response, there's been a bit of a reaction because Monday Q Info has been following this, saying, I respect your reasons for signing with LIV. And I also know you understand players chasing the tour as you played mini tours for years before making it. If you resign your tour membership, 4 players will earn a spot into the Korn Ferry Tour Finals. I hope you consider it. So it's a point worth pointing out. And Bubba Watson has responded just moments ago on Twitter saying, I have resigned from the PGA Tour, was told I would be removed from rankings after Sunday. Not sure how that plays out. Up to the tour. But this is a good point because these players that are being removed from the FedEx Cup standings, they do have an impact on what happens on the surrounding tours, including the Korn Ferry Tour Finals. I mean, where do you sit on the reaction from Bubba?
I think it was the right thing to do. The question is, what we need some clarity on from the tour is it a week too late? Because outside of the top 125, presumably those FedEx Cup rankings were frozen after the Wyndham Championship, the last regular tour stop on the PGA Tour. Bubba is outside that ranking. So it's people below Bubba that his presence was impacting. So it might require some kind of extraordinary action from the PGA Tour to resolve this issue in the favour of the players who would have been disadvantaged. But these are extraordinary times, and the tour has made clear to players higher up in the FedEx Cup rankings that they would not be disadvantaged in any way by players who were with Liv. In Bubba's case, it was an odd one because he declared that he was going to Liv a month ago. He had not put a tee in the ground because he's still recovering from a torn meniscus surgery, and he wasn't likely to play any Liv event for the rest of this year. So technically, he was not going to be suspended. Mm. So resignation was the only course of action that would have at least advantaged or not disadvantaged those below him.
So it's not just frustrating really for the PGA Tour players, it's all frustrating for those players like down on the likes of the Korn Ferry Tour who are very much being affected by these standings. Is this just another example of the huge domino effect that players joining LIV have that we are still sort of realising as we go along this journey and sort of recognising the issues that are cropping up? I mean, this is a classic example.
It really is. And, you know, there are tournaments where, as we saw this week in Memphis, when guys are trying to fight their way into the field, it's creating a vibe, a distraction, a sense of tension around the place. But there are also opportunities in this as well. As people leave, as we saw with players who made the eligibility list that the PGA Tour drew up for guys who might not otherwise have qualified for the playoffs in a world where LIV didn't exist. Once those players are removed from that list, other guys got what was rightfully theirs. That these guys are not PGA Tour members in good standing, so they're entitled to move up the list. And that works throughout every strata of the game. And, we could see it become more complicated in the years to come. We've seen amateurs go play at the start of their professional careers with LIV. What happens when they want to try to play their way at some future date through the developmental tours and perhaps to the PGA Tour, having done LIV before but never been suspended because they were never PGA Tour members before?
As you say, in a world where LIV didn't exist, that feels like much simpler times, Eamon. The golfing world feels like right now it has never been more complex. But, you know, we are on the edge. We are on the eve of the first FedEx Cup playoff event, and that really should be the focus. Now that that temporary restraining order has been ruled by the judge, those players will not be teeing it up. We can hopefully put the drama to the side. So, regarding that, what's your kind of biggest storyline? What are you looking forward to over the next 4 days or so?
I just think we've got a tremendous field. You know, the 120 guys there, it's one of the best fields we've seen in a very long time. On a good golf course, it always provides us some drama. I'm just hoping that we get 4 days where we can talk about what's actually happening inside the ropes. And can I just give you some credit, Anna? I'm actually impressed that you did not tell Amanda Blumenhurst that at least her 2-year-old daughter was not the most emotionally immature person who appeared on the show today. Because I expected you to direct that missile at me during the show.
That's a very unfair comment to Amanda. Eamon, it has been a pleasure as always. We will see you later.